Nothing heard. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. Amateur radio station Kilo 2, Bravo Alpha Romeo. The amateur radio station of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. Operating on the 146.79 repeater, courtesy of the hospitality and friendship and fellowship of the Bergen County FM Association. Barra encourages users of this repeater to support the Bergen County FM Association. In any case, we have a TechNet every Thursday night. This TechNet is designed to provide any licensed amateur with privileges to operate in this part of the 2-meter band with the opportunity to ask a question about amateur radio. Any question is considered a technical question, no matter how trivial, no matter how complex. Amateur radio is a technical hobby. It is not as simple as making a cup of tea, but maybe it's maybe a little more complex than other hobbies as well. Who knows? In any case, let's not wax poetically. Let's talk about how you might participate. Participation is very simple. You will check in when your part of the call sign group is called for, and you will provide your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. You need to say something like W2TTT Gordon, and I have a question. And then you say over, and I'll acknowledge you, and if not, you come back again in a subsequent time until we get everybody checked in, and then we go rolling through the list. We'll also take breaks during the early part of the net to take further check-ins. We'll also have a few other announcements typically before the net gets rolling, or during the time of the net, I should say, to punctuate the questions. So, on that happy note, will any station whose call sign begins with whiskey please check in with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. This is K2BAR.
W2BVV. The name here is Tim. No comments, no questions.
Good evening, Tim. W2BVV. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR.
This is W2DTA. Tony. No, Gordon, no questions or comments. Just hang. I enjoyed it so much last week.
Thank you, Tony. W2DTA. Welcome. And I'm glad you did enjoy it. It was a pleasurable net. Before we continue down the roll call, I need to point out that after the roll call, I may somewhat precipitously disappear for about 5 minutes. And it literally will be precipitously because my son is coming home from spring break, or for spring break, and I'd like to just greet him when he walks in the door. So if you'll forgive me that, and I beg your indulgence. So, thank you, Tony. Any other whiskey stations? Your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. Okay. Kilo stations. Kilo stations at this time.
KO2, okay. Bennett, no question.
Okay, Bennett, very good. KO2, okay. So acknowledged. Any other Kilo stations? Please call K2BAR.
KC2SAV, out. No questions.
KC2SAV, out. Oh, well, wow. No questions. Well, you guys are killing me tonight. We have nets like this, and they work out really well eventually. Okay, so KC2SAV acknowledged. And good evening to you, Al. Anybody else with Kilo stations?
This is KC2PYB, Richard. No questions.
YB. Alrighty, anything else in the way of kilos, please call K2BAR.
KC2KXV, Vinny, no questions.
No questions.
Okay, I heard KC2KXV, Vinny, no questions. Female voice, go.
KC2SIL, this is Katie, no questions.
I wasn't sure. Hi, Katie. How are you, KC2SIL? Very good. Welcome aboard. Anybody else with the Kilo stations?
KC2DSL, David, no questions.
Mr. Levine, good evening to you, sir. KC2DSL, no questions. Oh, man. All right, who else in the Kilo department?
KC2SKL.
KC2SKL, Katie, hello there. Greetings, and not Katie, Kelly. Anyway, all you K people. Alrighty. Kelly, do you have a question or a comment for the net?
No comments, since you did correct yourself, and it is Kelly, not Katie. No questions, no comments.
And while you're both K, my wife is, her middle name is Catherine, so I get even more confused. Anyway, don't mind me. And my grandmother was a Catherine, but her middle name was Catherine. But that's another matter. Anyway. Alrighty. Anybody else with the Kilo, please call K2BAR. Okay. November stations, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. This is N2OEF. A multi-part question.
God bless you, Noel. A multi-part question. So, all right, M question as opposed to just question. Very good. Alrighty. Anybody else in the November department, please check in.
Yeah, Mr. K, Jim, no traffic.
Good evening, James. All right, NS2K so acknowledged. Anybody else with the November calls? Okay, any alpha calls, please call K2BAR. Okay, anybody else who did not check in, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, or none of the above.
N3CRT, Charlie, no questions, no comments.
Hey, Charlie, I was kind of wondering. Yeah, Katie did check in, you didn't check in. Why, okay. Very, very good. And, let's see, anybody else? This is K2BAR. Okay. Just a quick note, Charlie. I was puttering through here today, and you asked about that junior tracker, Gizmachi, and it occurred to me that that went the way of the rotator, I believe, during the auction. That is why I cannot find it. So, therein lies your question, which is a nice way of introducing a quick announcement for everyone. Barra is having its annual auction. It is its March meeting. We do not have a meeting Sunday night. No meeting Sunday night. Our meeting is Sunday at 1, where we have the Ham Fest at the Westwood High School in Washington Township on Ridgewood Road. It's even more exciting. Vendors may come at noon, and buyers, or if you will, bidders at 1. And I do believe that Sid and company will be out there doing the hot dog thing, so we should have something to nosh. Should you be so interested in something, let's say you're coming from church or you're coming from brunch and it's been too long since you ate.
K2KCL repeater.
Yeah, I'm still getting over my cold here. But anyway, should you require something to take the edge off before you get home for a Sunday evening dinner, you'll be well taken care of by Sid and the gang. So on that note, I'm going to turn it over to Noel for his multiple question, or multi-part question, and to Oyel,
K2BAR. K2BAR, this is N2OYO. The multi-part question is technical, legal, and opinion. Three different things. As you know, I've been having trouble getting on the 440 net. I decided that I'm going to break down, buy a dual band mobile transceiver, something with 35, 40, 50 watts. Now, this is where it gets interesting. For the opinion part, I'm interested in the opinions of anybody. as specific models and makes. I don't want something that's really open to inner mouth. I don't need anything that's APRS or anything fancy. I figure it's something $200-$400 range. I would like crossband repeat that I'd use in half duplex. Somebody mentioned to me there's a problem with the hang time on the repeater and this and that and the other thing. And I wasn't sure. I think that person was talking about full duplex operation. I sit at work all day. I have an hour lunch. I can listen to the repeater very nicely on my HT. Cannot hit that thing to save my life. Car does very nice in the parking lot. My idea is I have in the car, believe it or not, an alarm system with two extra ports that I can use to switch in, on and off a relay. My thoughts are put the transceiver in the car, run it off the auxiliary batteries, which are 230 amp hours, which are in the trunk and charge whenever you turn the car on, so I'm not worrying about juice. My idea is to simply turn it on, sit in having lunch, and talk on 7-9, listen on my HT. The legal part is, I think it's legal because when I identify on my 440 HT, it goes out to the car, the car's identified, the single coming out to the repeater is identified because I just identified. So my question, multi-part question is, in opinion, who thinks which rig would be best for my use? Is it legal? And is there going to be a technical problem using half duplex, not full duplex? Over to you, K2BAR and Toyo.
Okay. Let's start here. I've done this before. That's number one. Number two, you can do some funky things to make sure that you don't have a problem. If you set up the crossband repeat to use perhaps the input on the 2 meter side only as a simplex, and then on the output side or the other side, the 430 meg, let's say, side, you could set it up so that you would come in with a PL that would be different than what the repeater needs, and probably keep things from rattling it the other way most of the time. Look for a radio that allows you to set a receive PL differently than a transmit PL. That way you don't have to worry about having people directly on the input, you know, if you will, transmitting back through the repeater or through your little automotive device. Because you are able to walk over to it and turn it off, even though you have the ability to remote control it with your car gizmachi, I think that's local control. I don't think it has any additional ID requirements. And as long as no one else can trigger it because you, let's say, you know, picked your PLs carefully in the reverse direction so that, you know, it's pretty obnoxious. You're not going to pick 141.3 or something. You'll pick, like, you know, 2-something or, you know, something obnoxious. Or set up even for DPL the other way. I don't think you'll have a problem. I really don't. So I don't think it's a legal problem. I don't think it's a technical problem. I think it's a great idea, and the fact that you can hear the repeater directly on your HT simplifies the process a bit. So what you do is you got to look for a radio that has crossband repeat, has input and output PLs. They're independently set on each band, and also that the receive PL frequency can be set differently than the transmit PL frequency. Olinco makes a pretty decent radio that'll do that. I personally am partial to the Kenwoods, but you don't want anything as fancy with the APRS radio. I was going to say, if you wanted to get a new radio, if I was going to buy a radio and I didn't have the love for other things that I have, I would seriously consider one of those new fancy schmancy APRS capable Kenwood radios. So that's my take on the matter. Been there, done that, got yelled at by people who will remain nameless for doing it. Didn't tie up the repeater at all. But people, just the mere fact that I did it kind of annoyed people. And that was 10 or 15 years ago, maybe more. It was more, in fact. It was almost 20 years ago. So I did it with a 721A when they were brand new, and a 621. So that'll tell you what that's like. Which, by the way, if you can find one used, a 721A would be a partial solution to what you're looking for, but you got to make sure you have the received PL. Anyway, anybody else with answers to Noel's question, please call K2BAR.
Comment.
Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I would just recommend you're asking for specific models. I did a lot of shopping around and came down to two dual band radios that were what I thought were affordable and high quality. One was an Elinco dual band, which come to find out suffered from a lot of intermod problems. Another was the Yaesu FT8800R, FT8800R, and that's what I ended up settling on. I got a great deal from gigaparts.com, and went there now, and they actually have a similar special going on. That's $309, and that's after manufacturer's coupon, and it also comes with the separation kit. That was the key for me, is I wanted to put the rig in the trunk and have the faceplate up front. And it also does, it is capable of cross-band repeat.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't added that RZA a requirement. I was trying to stick with his budget issues. But I'll tell you, the Elinco single banders seem to be fine with respect to intermod. They're not terrible. They're actually pretty good. If you want something that's more intermod proof, ICOM, but again, that's, a budget issue, and as is the Kenwood, but I would think that the human factors, though, on the Yaesu, I'm sorry to complain about this, but it just seems that the Yaesu human factors, the user interface on any radio they have is just, shall we say, cumbersome, and I'll use that word with a lot of generosity.
Can I have one more part for the question?
Go ahead.
In the car, I have two 115 amp hour C-cycle batteries. They're rated to give out 25 amps for 200 minutes each. They're currently in parallel, and a big relay throws whenever you start, after you start the car up successfully, connected it directly across the car battery. And there's four gauge wires coming from the front to the back. Same setup I had in my truck for years. And that battery is, I bought it new in 85. And it's currently sitting at the Red Cross as the backup battery for the station. So that seems to be a good method of connecting it. It's the police fire truck method. Okay. At the last Barra auction, I bought a little device that goes in both. Retail price new is $359. It appeared to be new in the box. It's you can take 24 volts in, and it'll give you 13.8 regulated with a voltage anywhere from 18 volts up to 50 volts in. So that would work. I'm thinking I should sell it on eBay and turn around and buy a toy that you, like you had, which will connect directly to the parallel batteries and give you a 13.8. I think you bought it from PowerWorks or one of those places. So, technically thinking, I'm thinking converting from whatever the battery voltage is directly to 13.8 would be better off than trying to convert and switch back and forth putting the two batteries in series when I'm using them and parallel when I'm not using them.
K2GCL repeater.
And to OEL.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you get the current capacity out of it and you use a boost regulator, the M8XJK boost regulator is a fine thing. That's what I would do. In fact, I would mount it close. Well, where would I mount it in your situation? I have to think about it. There'll be a voltage potential difference between the two batteries because of their proximity. I'd run the charge. Well, no, man, how do you do that? I think, I'm going to have to think about that one, because you've got, you know, a 20-foot, plus minus, distance length. You know, you got a 20-foot voltage drop, in your wire going from between the two sets of batteries, the front batteries and the rear batteries. So there's an issue there. Just out of curiosity, Noel, what is the charging voltage that's going into the batteries in the trunk?
Whatever the car puts out, I've measured as high as 13.8, 13.9. I don't think it's ever really gone over that. Bear in mind, the truck one has lasted, it's the same type of battery, an RV marine battery, and it's lasted 10, 11, 12 years. I bought it with the truck in 95. So, and it's still going strong over at, well, I wouldn't say really strong, but still workable, and it's being used to rig rug. So I don't think I'm worried about that. The batteries, what I did is, I don't trust the ground system in the vehicle, so even though it has a short ground wire, 4-gauge, to sheet metal, adequately grounded, I ran two wires from the front to the rear. The wires are 4-gauge. Considering that you're charging the batteries at 10 amps, 20 amps, whatever it may be, there's not a lot of voltage drop in 4-gauge, nice, flexible, high-quality wire that's well-bonded and to OEM.
Okay, I guess what I need to know is this. When the car is not running, what is the voltage on the battery in the trunk? And when the engine is running, what is the voltage on the battery in the trunk after it's been running for a couple minutes?
I actually never got out and bothered to measure it, but the charge, the battery voltage of a reasonably charged battery is like 13.2, and it drops down rapidly to 12.8, and it'll stay that way for quite a period of its life cycle. And then, of course, as it starts going down at 10.8, it's fully dead. I sized them so I never expect to run them less than more than 40%. In other words, I expect to always have at least 60% reserve capacity to keep the batteries with a long life. So I'd have to assume that what's the resistance of, say it's 20 feet. 20 feet of 4-gauge wire on the positive side, and on the negative side, 20 feet of 4-gauge wire to battery terminals, plus whatever the ground, because that's in parallel, through the car body.
Okay, I would do two things. I've given this a little bit of thought. Appropriately fused, I would use your current lead that's going from your alternator to your batteries in the rear as a charging line. I would then connect to that battery in the rear, the battery bank in the rear, the boost regulator. The output of the boost regulator, I would run a separate line or lines, as the case may be, appropriately fused, back up to your usage point. You can set the boost regulator to overcome any voltage drop. I know, for instance, that my Alincos, one of them anyway, the 2-meter one for some reason, doesn't like to run high power after about 45 minutes if my engine isn't running. It just doesn't. It starts to come unglued. So I either run the engine or we'll put in a boost regulator. I have a second boost regulator that I managed to fry because I did something stupid to it. You cannot connect the output of boost regulator to a power supply. Let me say that. Do not connect the output of the boost regulator to the power supply. That was dumb. Anyway, it's probably minor, but in any case, that's what I did. So I have two, but the good news is that I'll have two working ones soon. In any case, now that we're done with true confessions time here, bottom line is that the boost regulator makes a fine toy to drive whatever voltage you want. You want to see 14 volts all the time at your operating position, even though the batteries are in the trunk with a lot of wire in between, you can do that. In fact, in your application, I would give serious consideration to getting the more expensive model, the most expensive model with the fan, the whole thing, because you have so much battery capacity, the ability to add more if you want. Why not have the current capacity up from that regulator? I think that would be just marvelous.
Of course, you spend money like it's water. I, on the other hand, due to the fact that my wife is very, very frugal, I should say. Of course, see, if I wasn't married, I'd probably be living in a shack someplace with nothing. She's a good influence. But we have certain rules in our house, and one of the rules is if I can sell stuff on eBay or if I can earn money outside of my normal cash paycheck, I can spend it on whatever I want. And so far, I've got about $600 squirreled away that I can spend on anything I want without complaints from the XYL. That's the important thing. So I wanted to get an antenna for the roof, a dual band, and a setup. I don't know if, I believe the rig, the booster that you were talking about, I believe it ran, what, $80, $90 into OEL?
The one I have cost, I believe, was $150. There's a $180 or $200 model. They changed their prices a little bit for the one that has the fan, which is the only one that's bigger than the one I have. Since my application was literally portable battery box based, I did not see the point in buying one that would require that I power a fan from a battery. I just didn't see the logic of that. I would be more frugal with my power. I do not spend money like water. I have the same basic philosophy around here as to the expenditures on amateur radio, and that's how we do that. So with the money you have, you're about $100 short to buy the radio, buy the antenna, and buy the $200 boost regulator. You're right on the edge, and if you look around and buy a used radio, then you're there now with money to spare.
Well, as Gene says, many hams come to him, credit card in hand, and buy, for instance, a AT200 LDG Electronics AT200 Pro auto tuner that lists for $259, give him a credit card for $99 plus tax, $105, and pay in the rest in cash, so that somebody else who sees the credit card receipt might not realize that this particular device costs $259. We're not going to say who did that, but you understand what I'm saying, and to all you.
AB2BE.
Okay, AB2BE noted. All right, well, I'll just say this. I don't do that. In any case, Darryl, we got you. Anybody else have any comments, questions, or confusions for Noel's power system and duplex radio question?
N3CRTWX checking in.
Okay, Harvey, KC2AWX, I got you checking in. We'll come back to you in a minute. And Charlie, I think you had a comment. N3CRT, go ahead. K2BAR.
Okay, I have a question. When was the last time you replaced these batteries? You said they were 10 years old in the trunk or whatever. Do you ever pull the caps off and service them with water or bring them to an appreciable depth of discharge value and let them recoup their capacity that way? I would be real surprised that you have much of your original capacity if you haven't done anything with them up until this point. Just wondering, this is N3CRT.
2GCL repeater.
Go ahead, Noel.
The battery that I'm talking about that I bought in 1995 was the one that was in my van originally in the dual battery system. I took it out and replaced it with two new batteries about 18 months ago. The original battery was rated 120 amp hours, something like that. And I did borrow a heavy-duty battery charger and use what they call the desulfidation, whatever. It's supposed to be a thing that charges it up and discharges it and does all this magic thing. I ran it for about 2 weeks in the house. Every day I'd reset the thing and say, go do a cycle. And whatever it is, it works fine for one radio at the Red Cross. We did a load test on it. At 100 amps, the voltage dropped from 12.8 down to 11.5 at 100 amps with the heavy-duty load tester we have. However, you're going to be drawing 10, 12 amps. At 10, 12 amps, it's dropping down a couple tenths of a volt. We didn't run it appreciably more than that. It just sits there on a trickle charger, one of the ones that says, keep alive. If we ever use the thing appreciably, the keep alive charger will take probably 60 days to recharge the battery to capacity because it's only putting in a couple hundred mil, just enough to keep it from cooking. Low enough to keep it from cooking, high enough to keep it from self-discharging. The batteries in the truck, in the case now, are 18 months old.
Okay. Those load checks like that are not ideal. The way you want to do it is you want to do a rated capacity check. So if it's 110 amp hours or whatever, you divide it. You want to not draw a whole, you don't want to draw 110 amps for an hour. And actually, it would be 51 minutes. It's 85% of the rated value is how they calculate it. So 51 minutes, 85% of an hour, you could draw 110 amps out of that, and it has to remain above an endpoint voltage of, I think it's 1 volt per cell. So I believe it's 10 volts for a battery like that. And, you want to do a long, constant check like that, probably at least once a year, to just maintain the battery health and know that it's not going to fail you if and when you need it. N3 CRT.
Well, bear in mind, the test that we did only establishes the internal resistance to the battery. For instance, if we tested it at 20 amps, and the voltage dropped to, we considered end voltage to be of 10.8 volts to be the end of the useful life of that particular charge that the most inverters, things like that, cut off at 10.8 volts so they don't permanently damage the battery. So my thoughts on the subject was we weren't doing a lot of testing. We wanted something that didn't cost any money to speak of for the Red Cross. We did a load test of sorts. We put a car headlight on it for a couple hours one day. It was still lit, and the voltage had only dropped, was still above 12 volts. And the car headlight draws to you 10 amps, something like that, 10, 12 amps. We weren't doing a lot of testing, and besides that, the old battery that's sitting at the Red Cross is just a backup until they get the generator running. So we don't have to worry a lot of that. How many transmissions are you going to make at the Red Cross before somebody with the key comes and turns on the generator? That wasn't really our prime concern. And as far as the new batteries, I figure they're probably okay. Back to net, K2BAR and Toyo.
Okay, very good. So have we beaten this to death? And I got a couple of things I'd like to take care of but this is interesting. Anybody else have any further comments, questions, confusions? Because I never assume that we've had the last word. But for now, we have. Okay. All right. Good evening to you, Daryl. AB2BE. Real quick, do you have any questions or comments for the net that you want to let us know that you have?
Yeah. ABQBAR, ABQBE. I need to see about going over cost analysis. I'm going to try and put a repeater up on the air on battery power, and I'm going to attempt to charge the batteries off the solar panel. It's a 35-watt repeater, transmitter, and I'm going to be putting in 1,200 amperage hour worth of batteries, deep cycle, and I need to determine, based on 4 to 6 hours of talk time during the day, what size solar panel in current output that I need to add to the repeater so that it will meet and slightly exceed the needs as far as recharging the batteries. Back to net.
Okay. So your budget, right, but I wasn't expecting the question immediately, but let me just check everybody else in and we'll come to it next, I guess. KC2AWX Harvey, do you have any questions or comments from that you'd like us to know about?
Not really, but I like Daryl's idea, solar power. That's neat. I charge my little 12-volt gel cells for my QRP rig that way during the summer. Just take the battery outside the solar panel and let it charge up for about 4 hours in good sunshine. And I could use the battery at night and talk to people. And I'm going to have this PSK31 module hooked up to my 817. I'll be on portable and be on PSK31 on 10, 6, and 2. So I think that'll be ideal. And I like the idea of the solar panel repeater. That's great. KC2AWX.
Okie doke. Very good. Is anyone else wanting to check into the net, please call K2BAR. Okay, let me just repeat the club announcement. The Sunday meeting for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association this Sunday will be not at night. There is no meeting at the Red Cross Sunday night. We will have our auction instead. The auction will begin at 1 p.m. at the place where we always have the Handfest, which is the Westwood High School in Washington Township on Ridgewood Road, not Ridgewood Avenue, Ridgewood Road. I think there'll be a nominal talk-in on 146.79. And vendors or sellers, if you will, are welcome to come at noon. And buyers are welcome to come at 1. And the games will begin shortly thereafter with, I believe, W2 Hocus Pocus as our auctioneer once again. I believe the club takes 10% of the price up to $10. So the if you sell an item for $100 or $1,000, the club only gets $10. So I think that's the key point on the auction. It's a lot of fun, and of course the guys from the Fairlawn Club, Sid and company, will be doing the hot dog and soda and snack kind of thing. So we will have a good time. So on that happy note, let's examine Daryl's question. Okay, to review, we have a 35-watt-out repeater. We have a fixed battery bank at this time, although I happen to know he can double it, like he told me that, of 1,200 ampere hours of a battery system. We're expecting a transmit power budget for about 6 hours, and then we have to have a receive budget of the other, let's say, 18, which would include the receiver on, the transmitter on, but not transmitting, and whatever controller circuitry might be involved. Having said that, the calculation is pretty simple. Take 35 watts, make it 70. If you want to give yourself a margin, you can make it 100 watts. Let's do that just for the simple math. 700 watts for 6 hours is 600 watt hour. 600 watt hour. Divide that by 12 or so. will give you how many, let's see, 12, yes, that'll give you how many ampere hour. You take that ampere hour rating, divide that into 1,200, and that will tell you how long your battery bank is going to last. I would not recommend on a routine basis going below 50%. Again, I tend to engineer these things rather conservatively. So I would use a 100-watt transmitter budget and transmit. I would, oh, I left out a step. Pardon me. 600 watt hours plus, let's say it's another, let's say you've got 2 amps of draw the rest of the time, which is probably high for the controller and everything else that's powered on, receiver, etc., for the other 18. So that's 30, let's see, that's, let's see, 2 times 18, 36, well, I've already done that to amp hours, sorry.
K2TCL repeater.
Okay, start again. Sum, well, first divide 600 by 12, and then add that to 36. And that will give you your total ampere hour per day that you need. Take that and divide it into your 1,200 for as much of that, or as much of that 1,200 as you want to use. I would only use 600 of it myself. And that's how many hours, and or days and hours, or hours, hours that you'll be able to run, or days you'll be able to run, I'm sorry. So that's pretty clear. And that's a pretty conservatively designed thing, approach to that. I haven't run the numbers yet, but I'll have the time to talk, write, and calculate, but that's pretty much how I would go about it. Then, the next thing I would do is then see how much current you need to provide on the charge side to replenish that. You have to anticipate so many days of so much current, let's say minimum current, no current coming out of the charging array. And that's the other side of the equation. So you do your discharge first, then you do your charge side second, and you see where the intercept points cross for your system. But I designed very conservatively, Daryl. I got to tell you that right now. Anybody, I mean, I've kind of babbled along here kind of in real time. Does anybody have any approaches that might be different? Am I being too conservative? Is there something I've left out, et cetera, in the general conceptualization of this thing that might we might want to add to the discussion? This is K2BAR.
N3CRT.
Go ahead.
I heard the beginning of it, and I didn't really hear a whole lot of your response, but did you talk about transmitter efficiency and the loss involved there?
Yeah, I took a 35-watt transmitter and budgeted 100 watts to run it.
Okay, and then, you know, like a satellite does, there's a battery charge regulator that if there's trip points, that if the power system trips below a certain value, it automatically shuts off the transmitter until the charging system can recoup the batteries to a certain level. But then you'd want to incorporate into that battery charge regulator an override. Of course, your receiver would always be active, and your command station would always, you know, be able to command the repeater on. I think that would be a needed and not to be overlooked option. N3CRT, that's all I've got.
Okay, I've done some calculations here. I show 86 ampere hour per day to run the system the way you talked about, Daryl. So with a 1,200 ampere hour system, you could run a week with no sunlight. That's probably okay. If I did my calculations correctly, that's okay. That's accounting for, you know, essentially a 35% efficiency transmitter that accounts for 2 amps of receivers and controllers and stuff on standby the other 18 hours of the cycle. 6 hours of transmit, as you said. So 86 ampere hour per day is your load. So now the question is, you know, with 1200 ampere hour, yeah, you can run it for a week and only use half your battery bank. That's good. Appropriate threshold of the way Charlie talked about, the way satellites do it. Now the question is, how are you going to put 86 ampere hour back into that most days? And that's the question. So what you have to do is, you have to say, okay, on a winter's day, let's say that's a sustained optimistic day in winter, you're going to get about, 6 hours of about, let's say, 6 amps of power max from a couple of very nice, let's say a pair of expensive of panels. So if you're only getting 6 amps for times 6 hours on a winter's day, and you need 86 to run it, you need 4 or 5 panels, 6 amp panels, to run it in the winter. So you're going to need some significantly honking panels. Now, can you do things to derate that? Yes, you can. You can go to a 10-watt transmitter. You can go efficiently with your receivers. You can go and get a CMOS controller. You can do any number of things to improve your lot in life. And you can also operate closer at the margins than what I engineered in this thing. I made some very conservative judgments here, overrating some things and, you know, and such like that. I gave you a lot of margin in that. So, as a practical matter, could you probably live with 4 panels? Yeah. If I had to do this, I would do it with 4 panels and a low voltage cutoff circuit and take my chances.
How much current I need to put in, and I think that 86 helped out a lot, so appreciate it. Maybe 2B.
Okay, we largely doubled there, I'm sorry. But basically, you can get away with 4 panels because of the conservative nature of the way I engineered this. So I would go with 4 6-amp panels. That's what I would do. If you get 4 6-amp panels, you're good to go. The other approach is to derate your transmitter to about 10 or 15 watts. Go with 2 panels, and you could probably get away with it. We could refine the numbers a little bit more and maybe double your battery bank and get away with 2 panels all the time. If you get 2 6-amp panels there and go to 2400 ampere hour, put that low voltage cutoff circuit in like Charlie was discussing, and maybe go to a 15-watt transmitter. Yeah, all those things combined could save you some significant bucks and make the system just as robust, but perhaps a little more caution.
Okay, Gordon, hand it to me when you're done.
It's all yours.
Okay, like you already know, I'll add another 1,200 amperage hour worth of batteries. My primary concern is just coming up with the current needed. And that 86 amperage hours, I'll just have to see about, basing it on a summer day. And if I get what I'm going to need on a summer day, I'll multiply that times 0.55 and add the solar panels appropriately if I'm phrasing that correctly.
No, I would assume that on a winter's day, you're going to get 6 hours of light that are useful, but you got to make sure you can get 6 amps out of those panels on a winter's day for 6 hours each. I mean, for each 6 amps each for 6 hours on a winter's day. Now, you might go a week with no sunlight. So if you do that, you have a 1200 amp bank, you'll be okay to a point. A 2400 ampere hour bank, you can go, you know, 2 or 3 weeks and you'll still have the repeater up.
Okay. You know, you can either do it from a winter's day or a summer's day. It's just that the solar panels are usually rated in full sunlight. So unless I find a manufacturer that rates their solar panels in cloudy day efficiency, I'm going to have to multiply it by a fudge factor. If I decrease it by 50% or multiply it times 0.5, the manufacturer's stated output in current, not unless I'm missing something when I'm looking at the specs for these solar panels, Gordon.
You were talking past each other. You get full sunlight in the winter. You just get less of it. You get fewer hours of it. So on a rosy, on a series of bright, cold winter days, you're going to get full sunlight for about 6 hours.
Okay. Well, let's see here. If I use your 86 average hours and just divide it by 6, I don't know, what is that? 6 times 12 is something like that, 70, 6 times, so I'm going to have to be something around 13 amp output then.
K2KCL repeater.
That would be correct. That'd be correct. And, you know, you just need to make sure you're going to get about 86 ampere hour worth of power. Why don't we call it 100? Let's over-engineer that, too. If you can get 100 ampere hour of power out of your array on a winter's day, you know, on a sunny winter's day, then you're in good shape.
Okay, good. The solar panels are the only thing that's going to be the cost for putting this repeater up, because I have everything else. I have the batteries, I have the outdoor cabinet that it's going in. We have a 30-foot tower that's been donated by one of the guys, and we have temporarily we have a 17-foot diamond monoband, and once we get this up in the air and everybody sees how good the coverage is, I've done some fantastic simplex checks. I'm on top of the mountain there in Wayne. It's by the William Patterson University. 5 watts into Manhattan on simplex. 5 watts into Staten Island on simplex. This is on UHF. And so far, it's kind of exciting as to the coverage. So we'll turn it back to the net for the other guys. K2PAR, this is AB2BE. Thanks a lot, Gordon.
Well, you know, as I'm saying, why don't you budget for 10 watts for a while? I think that might make good sense. Put the extra batteries in and only put 2 panels up. If you put the extra batteries in, budget for 2 panels, you know, you've cut your costs way back, and, you know, you can work up to the other problem. Nothing like a functional repeater to attract money, you know?
Okay, yeah, we'll go 15 or 20, W2IP is the one that built the repeater, so we'll hand it back to him, and he can see about lowering the power. Good deal. Appreciate it very much, Gordon. B2BAR, AB2BE.
10-2-0-E-R.
Yeah, I'll get you in a second. Well, just one other thing for that. You want to make sure that it doesn't just put out less power. You got to make sure that the input power is more reserved as well. If he built a repeater, have Paul call me, and we can run through these numbers. We've done this before. He and I have done a couple other projects before, so including a walk in the woods, which to go scrape somebody out of who was lost. So we've done a few interesting things together over time, and we'd be more than happy to sort out that engineering problem for you and then just turn back the numbers. All right, very good, and I'm glad you came in, Darrell. That was a good question. AB2BE over to N2OEL, K2BAR.
Perhaps you should go to Yahoo, search for groups, and the one you want is 12VDC, 12 volt DC. I just found it by searching on the word volt. They've beat this to death, and in the file section, they have calculators. In it, you tell it where in the country you are. There's charts showing the percentage of sunlight over the year, this and that. The other thing, you tell it what the average use per day is, and they'll give you the size of your battery bank and the approximate size of your panels. You, of course, have to say your efficiency, your charge rate, and all this other stuff that's available. But once you plug the numbers in, it's pretty well been researched, and that group pretty much has every answer you could ask for. And it's free. So just go over to 12 volt DC group, Yahoo's. They're basically set up for people who are off-grid. Somebody who lives in a trailer, for instance, doesn't want to use a generator. They can figure their margin, how much they need to for whatever they want. Some of them, of course, will say, okay, in the wintertime, I'll kick up the generator once a week or whatever. But other ones live closer to what your repeater idea is, which is never use a generator. Anyways, that's my opinion. Try it. Look. Go into. Join in is easy. All you got to do is be a real human being. Looking through the files, there's all sorts of resources available on that subject. And to OEO, back to K2BAR.
Okie doke. Very good. That was good advice. So the Yahoo Group's 12 VDC. All right. I need to step out for a moment. I would like to greet my son, who's home for the next 10 days. So I'll be back. And Toriel, can you take the reins?
Okay, but we're going to be all done by the time you get back, because if nobody else has a question. Okay. So go ahead. Have a great time. Anybody else have any opinions, topics, anything that you'd like to bring up to the group?
Into OEL, this is KC2PYB.
Go ahead, KC2PYB. I forgot your name, and I don't have it written down.
This is Richard. It's KC2PYB. On this subject of all this solar panels and everything, all this higher mass and engineering is fantastic, except you're forgetting one thing, and I have a lot of personal experience with this. You better have a bottle of Windex and a nice soft cloth, because as the solar panel becomes dirty from the atmosphere, and I don't care where you are, it's going to get dirty. Your charging is, and I don't care how bright the sun is, whether it's the middle of the summer or what, your charging capacity is going to fall off dramatically. Here in the borough of Fort Lee, let me just let this drop out. If you go into the municipal parking lots, the machines where you buy your ticket all have a solar panel at the top of them. And when I worked for the parking authority, one of the jobs I had was every Friday, go around and clean every single panel. So that machine kept working. If a machine was reported not working properly or stopped working or whatever, the first thing we did was we went out there and we cleaned the solar panel, waited a couple hours and came back and checked the machine. It doesn't take much to cut into the charging capacity of one of these solar panels. And if you're in an area where there's high traffic, or even if you're out in the suburbs where there's not a high traffic, you're going to be picking up all kinds of garbage from the atmosphere, landing on your panel, and it looks like it's clean. But when you run your finger over it and look at your finger, you're going to find that it's filthy. And that's cutting into the capacity of that panel to charge up your batteries.
Yes, you're correct. And that's also covered in that group. These people have been doing this, some of them for 20 years, so there's a lot of resources available on Yahoo in the groups. I happen to read that one. I don't participate, but darn, it's been very interesting. The other thing is, Case, if you're looking for panels, the consensus on that group seems to be that Harbor Freight, when they're on sale, and if you join their buyers club, so you get the extra 10%, have the best panel at the cheapest price per watt. And you buy the kit. Then you throw away their controller and buy a Xanax or one of the good ones. But the panels, as they're sold, when you join the club and they're on sale, is the cheapest possible around. The other ones I've been looking at, believe it or not, Costco online. Go to Costco online. the search for the solar panels. They currently have